Last couple of days, we've been talking about Rashi on this week's parsha, who quotes the Torah's Kohanim, that when we do business, v'chisimkar memkar la'misecha, when you're doing business, you should try and prefer to do the business with a Jewish partner. So either you should buy or sell or hire, like the Rambam writes, from or to a Jewish partner as opposed to any other. So the question in general that is raised from this issue is, it's fascinating that you find the Rama and the Tshuva discusses the issue, and the Chasam Sofer, and the Stechemet, and so many Achronim are dealing with the particulars of this case, and how much are you obligated to give up money in order to prefer the Jew, and how much loss are you mechuyif to suffer. I find it very interesting because in general we have a principle that the Yerushalmi tells us. There's a very famous line that the Yerushalmi Meseches Peah quotes. I don't know Yerushalmis, but this is quoted by many Achronim. Ein lemeidim lo min ha-hagadus. The Yerushalmi says you don't have a right to learn a halacha from a haggadah, from a passage in Chazal, which is only, I don't know if you say allegorical, but some kind of story. Velo min ha-tosfos, and you can't learn it from Toseftos. Or ela min ha-talmud, says the Yerushalmi. The only place you can derive an absolute halacha lemaisa from is from the Talmud Bavli, from the Gemara itself. So here Rashi, and our Parsha, quotes a passage from the Torah's Kohanim, which is a Medrash on Chumash, and nowhere do we find that this shows up in the Gemara at all. There is no source. In fact, the Shulchan Aruch itself doesn't even quote it. It's a very strange halacha to discuss, because the Shulchan Aruch doesn't even deal with it. The only sources we have are the Tshuva and the Rama. The Rama himself in Shulchan Aruch doesn't talk about it, just the Rama and the Tshuva, and then the later Achronim all discuss it, but the whole source of it is not based off of a passage in the Talmud Bavli, and this would seem to go against this rule of the Yerushalmi that we don't learn halacha, we don't learn how to live our lives from a passage that was from anywhere else outside of the Talmud Bavli itself. Now the truth is, we do find in the Gemara...
It would have to be outside the Yerushalmi.
So we'll have to qualify.
Didn't know the Bavli.
So we'll have to qualify exactly what it means. So the Gemara actually in the Bavli already indicates that there is a major distinction that should be drawn between the two areas of thought, between halacha and between medrash and agada. So we have a story as follows, and there are others, but this is just one example. The Gemara says in Sanhedrin Daf Samach Zayin, there's a discussion there about what exactly was the plague in Mitzrayim of Tzfardeya. So how exactly did it take place? So we all know from kindergarten that there are different midrashim about how exactly it happened, but the Gemara there fills us in on a detail. Says the Gemara, Rabbi Kiva was of the opinion, the great Tana Rabbi Kiva said, Tzfardeya achas haisa, there was one big giant Tzfardeya, whatever that means, it swallowed up the whole country, I'm not sure exactly. Umala is kol eretz Mitzrayim. Rabbi Kiva's opinion was, there was this miraculous Tzfardeya that was hovering over the whole country, and everyone was petrified of this monstrous looking frog, and that's what the plague was. Amar lo Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, his friend, his contemporary Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah turns to him, he says, Rabbi Kiva. Actually, he doesn't refer to him by his name. He says, Akiva, my good friend Akiva. Malacha etzel agada, what are you talking about? Why are you giving an opinion about what the Tzfardeya was and what it wasn't? Kale midabra secha, stop talking and putting your foot in your mouth, basically. Velech etzel negam ve'olos, go back to the Beis Medrash and learn halacha. Don't get involved in agada because you don't know what you're talking about. And you see already the Gemara is saying clearly from the way that Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is referring to his friend Rabbi Kiva, you see that there was already a major distinction between those who were masters in halacha and those who were expected to be masters in other areas of Torah. Not that one is any less important than the other, but over here the Gemara clearly seems to tell us that the rules that govern the halacha lemaisa are not the same as the rules of how one can darshan the story or an agada or to understand a pasuk in Chumash. So that's a very important point that the Bavli already makes as well, and the Yerushalmi points out that therefore we don't learn halachas from a Medrash Agada, or from anywhere other than the Talmud, other than the Gemara itself. Now Rav Hai Gon explains, one of the great Gaonim explains, why should it be that we don't learn from a Agada? If the Medrash is something that we believe is part of our tradition, if it's something that we give all of our respect to, why can't we learn something important from the Medrash as well? So he explains why. He says, because the Divrei Agada lav kishmuahim. He writes, the Divrei Agada were not, the Midrashim were not meant to be as a way of teaching us what the halacha should be. Ella, kol echa dorish masha ala alibo. Each Tana who looked at a pasuk, and again, we're talking about the Gedolei HaTanaim, we're not talking regular people. They looked at a pasuk, they had an idea, and they put it out there, and they wrote it down, and that's what the Midrashim are. And he says, many of them are indecisive, many of them are inconclusive, they're not absolute. He says, Many of them are written b'derech efsher v'yesh lomar lo davar chatuch. They are not absolute at all. And he says, l'fikach ein somchem aleihem. Therefore, we cannot rely, we cannot depend on them la'alacha. It doesn't mean that you shouldn't learn a musar from it. It doesn't mean that you shouldn't learn a message for life. But to actually derive a halacha l'maisa from a medrash, says Rav Haigon, we don't do that because the medrashim were not stated as an absolute principle as given over by the Tanaim. It was rather as an idea that the Tanaim felt when they read a particular pasuk or a particular passage in the Torah. Rav Haigon writes in another tshuva that the Gemara tells us in Maseches Brachos that there's something called zevaos, and you're supposed to make a special bracha when this occurrence happens, zevaos. So the Gemara asks, my zevaos, what exactly is that? So the Gemara says it's like a ru'iyas adama, it's when the ground shakes, like an earthquake. So when there's an earthquake and you're saved, you should make some kind of bracha about the fact that there was an earthquake. Says the Gemara, what exactly is an earthquake? How do you explain the phenomenon of an earthquake? So now we know scientifically what it means. But the Gemara says, no, it means when the Ribbono Shel Olam looks down on the world and he sees that the Jewish people are suffering so much, so he sheds two tears, and his tears are so powerful that the world starts shaking as a result of those tears. So Rav Haigon was asked, what exactly does that mean? And should we draw conclusions from that about any halacha? Should we try to say, maybe if something else happens, maybe if there's a storm, it means that something else is happening, also we should make a bracha? Rav Haigon said, no. Hai milsa agadatahi. He says that Gemara is allegorical. Not that we don't take it seriously, but you cannot draw a conclusion. The Gemara says when there's an earthquake, maybe it means that God is shedding a tear. What does that mean? God doesn't shed tears. God doesn't have a body. He says it's a milsa da agadata. Uba v'chal da damila. He says whenever you encounter any of those kinds of stories, ein somchan al divrei agada. That's when we say you cannot rely on that to make a psak, to make a halacha lemaisa. And therefore he says, you have to take it for what it's worth. You have to take it in its context. Again, we don't make light of it. Like one of the Gedolei Achronim writes in the Sefer Menoras HaMor, written by Rabbi Yitzchak Abu Hab. So he says, don't mistakenly think that this means we don't respect the Medrash, that we don't take it seriously. He says, Chayavin anu lahamin bo kimo b'toras Moshe Rabbeinu alav hashalom. We take the Midrashim just as seriously as every other area of Torah. And if you find something in there that you think is an exaggeration or something that you don't understand, he says, it means that's b'chisaron hasagas da'atenu. There's some kind of deficiency in your understanding. Not that the Medrash doesn't make sense. My father once told me, in the name of Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, the Gemara says there was once a bird that dropped an egg, it laid an egg, and it drowned 60 cities. So how do you understand that Gemara? How could it be possible? A bird can drop an egg, you can have the biggest bird in the world, it can't destroy 60 cities, even if the cities are tiny. It doesn't make sense. So how do you understand the Gemara? So Rabbi Yisrael Salanter said, he knows what the Gemara means to say. The Gemara means to say the following. He said in his time, I don't know exactly the details of the story, but something to this effect, Rabbi Yisrael Salanter said there were two nations who were bordering one against the other, and one day a war was waged, a war broke out. So how was the war declared? The king of one country dropped he took a little bit of ink, and he wrote on his paper that we're officially declaring war, and now hundreds of thousands of people were killed as a result of the decree of the king. So the way they carried the story in the newspaper the next morning was, one drop of ink kills hundreds of thousands of people. Said Rabbi Yisrael Salanter. What do you mean? Did the drop of ink kill the people? Of course not. But we all understand what it means. We know that what it means is that the king took a drop of ink, he wrote a letter with that drop of ink, and now, as a result, there were tremendous consequences. Said Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, someone in 100 years from now who picks up the newspaper and sees, drop of ink kills hundreds of thousands of people, they're going to say, how can that be? It's impossible. You can have a very powerful drop of ink. There's no way it can kill anybody. So Rabbi Yisrael Salanter said, if you lived at that time, you would understand what it means. So he said the same thing with many of the Midrashei Chazal. You see, the Gemara says, a bird drops an egg, and now 60 cities get wiped out. How can that be? The answer is, at the times of Chazal, it made a lot of sense. They were obviously referring to something that took place at the time, and now we might not have the historical context to completely understand or appreciate what it is that the story represents. So that's the story with Divrei Agada. But now we come back to that Yerushalmi that we started with. The Yerushalmi that we started with was, you cannot derive a halacha from a Agada, number one, from a Medrash, like we just mentioned. And number two, it says you cannot derive something that is not spoken about explicitly in the Talmud, in the Gemara. So the question there is, what are the parameters of that statement? That's a very explosive statement. But what are the parameters of that? So Rabbeinu Tam has a very famous comment. Rabbeinu Tam lived in the late 1100s, one of the great Rishonim, the grandson of Rashi. So Rabbeinu Tam said, this means that the only time you cannot follow something that is stated outside of the Talmud is when you have something that is against what we're told in the Talmud itself. So let's say the Gemara tells us one thing, and now you have a Zohar HaKadosh that tells you something else, so you don't follow the Zohar in the place of the Talmud. If you have some, again, we have some exceptions to the rule, but generally we don't. Or if you have something that the Medrash tells you on a certain Parsha, and now you have some halacha that the Gemara in the Bavli or the Yerushalmi discusses, there, says Rabbeinu Tam, we don't follow the Medrash or the Zohar HaKadosh. But if you have no other reason to assume that there's anything in this Medrash that runs contrary, that runs against our understanding of what the halacha should be from the Gemara, then there's no reason not to follow the Medrash or not to follow the Tosefta. And therefore, Rabbeinu Tam warns those who wrote him this question. He says to them, you are going to stand up and challenge some of the minhagim of Rabbi Amram Gon or some of the Gaonim or some of the Rishonim. He says, how do you have a right to challenge them? Just because you didn't find it in the Gemara? You're not proficient enough to know whether there's something in the Gemara that's against what they said. So how can you challenge the practice that they instituted? Maybe they're right. Maybe they are absolutely right. So he says, person has to be a very, very well-learned and well-versed Talmud Chacham in order to be able to deny or to dispute a minhag of a previous generation, because even if you might not find the minhag in the Gemara itself, there's no reason to assume that the minhag shouldn't apply. It doesn't say just because it's not in the Gemara that we don't follow it. This was the opinion of the Rabbeinu Tam, and that was a very famous shita that he had. However, the Tosas Yantif, who lived in the 1600s, disagreed. Tosas Yantif, again, he was 400 years after Rabbeinu Tam, 500 years after Rabbeinu Tam, but still, he disagreed, and he has a whole interpretation in the Gemara, in Brachos, that he feels that no, this is an absolute statement. When the Yerushalmi tells us we don't learn halachas from a Medrash, or from an Agada, or from a Tosefta, that means anything that is not found in the Gemara, in the Bavli or the Yerushalmi, cannot become a halacha. And it doesn't matter how good an idea it is, it doesn't matter how much sense it makes, it doesn't matter that there's nothing in the Bavli or the Yerushalmi that contradicts it. We do not follow halacha that is not found absolutely clearly in the Bavli or the Yerushalmi, because that's where we derive all of our halacha from. That's what the Tosas Yamtiv writes. And Rabbi Cheska Landau, the Nadi Yehuda, who lived 150 years later, also agreed with that statement, with that sentiment, and he said that we don't derive any halacha from something which is not absolute in the Gemara, because he says if it was important enough, then it would have been quoted in the Bavli or the Yerushalmi. Obviously, from the fact that it was left out means it didn't belong there, because it's not supposed to be deriving any halachas from that claim. So that's the big machlokas. The Stechemed weighs in on the issue. He has pages and pages about it. And he writes that he thinks that had the Tosas Yamtif only known that Rabbeinu Tam wrote in a tshuva that we can follow a medrash or we can follow any other source, even though it's any time it's not against a explicit passage in the Bavli or the Yerushalmi, he says the Tosas Yamtif never would have said what he said. He never would have gone against Rabbeinu Tam. And he says, Ilu ha-yodeya, again, it's a strange assumption, I don't think it's true, but he says, Ilu ha-yodeya, had the Tosas Yamtif known that he was going up against Rabbeinu Tam, he never would have said such a thing. That's what he posits, that's what he assumes, and it's not clear at all that that's a true assumption. It's not always true that the Achronim, especially the early Achronim, have a problem going against the Rishonim, or that there's anything wrong with them going against the earlier Rishonim. The Rambam was asked the same question as well by the Chachmei Lunil. The Rambam was asked, what is our approach toward anything that's outside of the context of Talmud Bavli and Yerushalmi? So the Rambam famously writes also what his opinion is. He says, Kashali davarze yamim rabim. I've been bothered by this for a long time. How do we approach anything that's outside of the Talmud? So he says, Amarti vaday shedvarim elu l'Rab Shimon heim levado shestam sifri k'Rab Shimon. He says, when you find a passage in the Sifri that's not quoted in the Gemara, it means that was Rab Shimon's opinion, but it's not the overall consensus of the Tanoim of his generation. Vilu hayu hadvarim elu halacha, if everybody in his generation agreed that this is something they should take into consideration, lo havishasa gemar minei, says the Rambam. The Gemara wouldn't have left it out. From the fact that the Gemara leaves it out, it means it's not something we have to worry about when it comes to the Psak halacha. So that's what the Rambam writes. The Kesef Mishnah picks up on this and he says, if you look through the Rambam, excuse me Rambam, you'll find there are plenty of occasions where you paskin like some strange Tosefta that you dug up somewhere or some passage in the Yerushalmi or somewhere else that's very unconventional. So says the Kesef Mishnah, can you really say, Rambam, that anything that's outside of the confines of a Talmud Bavli or Yerushalmi you don't paskin like? Is that true? And you can say that's just a Shita Yechidav who is important enough it would be quoted in the Halacha. Is that really true? So the Kesef Mishnah challenges the Rambam. He says it's not really clear that the Rambam himself follows that rule, and that's why he's bothered a little bit. It's clear, whether you like it or not, it's clear that we have plenty of halachas that we follow that are not actually derived from the Talmud Bavli. Take some very simple examples and then we'll daven mincha. Let's say we all know that there's a practice to say the bracha Baruch Shapatrani. You'll be surprised, but that bracha shows up nowhere in the Talmud Bavli. And that's all based on a medrash on Chumash, and that's a major question. How do you understand why we do that? That's why many Achronim say you should do it without Shema Malchus, because after all, maybe it's not really sourced to the Talmud Bavli or the Yerushalmi, so why should we be saying it at all? But we know that the Minhag Olam is that we say it. And yet we derive a halacha psuka, even though it's something that does not find itself in the Talmud as any normal halacha would be found. Let's say there's an important halacha that unfortunately comes up every so often. Shulchan Aruch writes in Yerudea, Misha nitrifadas avivo ima, when you have a person who unfortunately has a parent who is unbalanced, you have a parent who is erratic, a parent who's senile, and I still have an obligation as a child of kibbut avayim, but it's getting to a point where I can't handle it anymore, says the Shulchan Aruch. Mishtadil lino gimayim kifi daitam, you try your best to be respectful to them. Ad sheyirucham aleim, you try to have compassion and mercy on them. Ve'imi yafshel olamot, let's say it gets to a point where it's so agitating, it gets to a point where you just can't be in their presence, it's so irritating. Mipnei sheishtageo biyoser, it's making you absolutely insane to sit there and put up with this abuse all the time from the parent that doesn't have their total mind. Yelech lo v'yanichem, he says you're allowed to leave, you can leave the job up to someone else, you don't have to suffer too much at the expense of kibbut avayim. That's what the Shulchan Aruch writes. Now, where does the Shulchan Aruch get this from? Where's the source of this halacha? The source of it is from a story with Rabasi. Rabasi had a mother who also had some kind of condition, and she wasn't fully in her right mind, and she started asking Rabasi for all kinds of things. So she said to him one day, I want jewelry. So he went out to the store, he bought her jewelry. She says the next day, I want a husband, I want to marry someone. So he says, okay, we're going to look for you. Then she says, I want you. So he felt that was so irritating when his mother started singling him out and saying, I want to marry you, and she was making him very uncomfortable about that. So Rabasi picks up, he runs away, and he leaves his mother to be dealt with other people. So this is a story that the Gemara quotes, but it's certainly an agadic story. It's not something that Rabasi was teaching us la halacha. And yet the Nosa Kalim have a discussion here. The Rambam quotes the Gemara la halacha, and the Ravid says, how can you learn a halacha from that Gemara? That Gemara was just a story with Rabasi. That story is good enough source to prove what the halacha is. So again, the Beis Yosef discusses the issue and he says, maybe yes, maybe no. But that's what the Rishonim are arguing about. When we have a story that the Gemara does quote and it's a Agada, or you have a story or you have something in the Midrashim that actually teaches us a halacha, should we say that we actually do not follow that? Or do you say no? There are exceptions to the rule where even though the Yerushalmi says in general, we have a rule that we don't follow halacha psuka when it's only derived from a secondary place, not from the main sources like the Talmud Bavli or Yerushalmi, maybe there are certain instances where we will break the rule, and we find that we will deal with such a halacha, even though it's very unconventional. So coming back to our parsha, where Rashi quotes a halacha from the Torah's Kohanim, it's something that has no source in the Gemara, no source in the Shulchan Aruch itself, but yet the Achronim seem to take it very seriously, and they debate the details of the case, the details of the issue, and how far we need to go with this halacha. This is something that we certainly do paskin like, although it's something that has no credible source in the Talmud Bavli or the Talmud Yerushalmi.